Good morning, everyone. Welcome to Business and Legal Talk with Leo and Claudine. Today is Saturday, March 9th. How are we doing, Claudine?
We are alive and well.
Great. Well, so I am your host, Leo Landaverde. I am a CEO and own a fractionalized accounting firm and serving clients from really all over in California and have fun doing it. And my co-host, I'm going to tell Claudine, we need to remind everybody what we are, so what we do.
All right. I'm a business and real estate attorney located in Turlock. Our business practice spans pretty much all of the Central Valley. Occasionally, we do go into the Bay Area if we have a case over there. And we are helping people stay in business, stay alive.
And we came together because we want to help businesses be profitable and sustainable.
And sustainable.
And that's really why we have this show. This is really, wow, we're is this our fifth or sixth show?
I think we're six now.
This is six shows.
We're grown up.
We should know what was going on, right? So we're loving this format of radio, and we already had some callers. So if you're listening to this, really what we're doing this show, it's about, there's a lot of misinformation out there, you know, about how to run a business, what to do with the running of a business, and really protection as a business owner. You know, who do you go to where you have questions?
And I think there's a lot of fear about reaching out because you don't know you reached out to the wrong person until you figured out it was the wrong person. There's not like a, we have reviews and there are reviews and stuff like that. But by and large, there's a fear of reaching out and not sure what it's going to cost.
Right. And you know what? At the end of the day, it comes a point in time in your business, you really got to invest in having the right advisors in your team. Our goal with this show is to give you as much as we can because it's really not about the money. It's about if you're successful and you're profitable, you will have the money to invest in those advisors you absolutely need to have on your team.
Absolutely.
So with that said, we have a great show for you today. I mean, there is a lot. I mean, I'm looking at 25 pages worth of stuff. Thanks to you, Claudine. And we can talk all day about this subject today.
We could talk for weeks about the subject.
So you want to tell us what we're talking about today, Claudine?
I think we're going to try to jump into some of the new stuff that's happening on the employment labor side. Mm-hmm. And so right now we've got a lot going on, and this is without question one of the most complicated areas of law. It's the most complicated area of business for business owners. We love our employees. Our employees are folks that we rely on and oftentimes become part of our family. But it's a very complicated area of law, and their rules are changing on a daily basis, certainly on an annual basis. And some new employment laws come on board, and they'll be implemented in July, and some will be implemented in January. And, it's just, and then we'll have rulings from the court that'll be, random. And if you're not watching that, and, a lot of business owners are really not watching what the appellate court's doing or, perhaps the California Supreme Court's doing.
Because we're watching reruns of Friends on TV,
That's right. Friends or...
Because we have so much time available,
depending on your age category, could be the Brady Bunch. could be the Partridge Family. I don't really know.
Come on, we're talking to business owners, right? Who work 14 hours a day.
Right.
When do they have time to go research all this stuff?
You don't. You honestly don't. And we get caught with it.
Right.
Even those of us who this is what we do, and we, certainly in our office, and we've talked about this before, we are a very collaborative office. And so
I love that. Yeah.
When one of us comes across something or, happens to, have read an appellate court decision and, we rush in to the other one. And in fact, I was in Harpreet's office this morning. I had come across a really, really good ruling. It was a well thought out and well reasoned ruling from the appellate court on a subject that we deal with all the time, which is Private Attorney General Act, also known as PAGA. And it was just a well reasoned and rationalized ruling on how to calculate penalties when you're dealing with the PAGA claims. It was really good. And I printed it out and I had like these 10 pages and I go running into his office and I'm like, look at this is really good. You're really going to enjoy reading this. And I'm thinking to myself, God, we must be really weird because we get excited about that and we really enjoy reading. I'm sure I could pull 10 random people off the street and hand it to any one of them and they'd probably just throw it in the garbage.
Right.
want to cry.
Right. And so I think, you know, why don't we whet the listener's appetite with some of the things, you know, and, you know, we want to, in everything that we do and when we talk to our audience, we know where you're at. So you are not attorneys. You're not business analysts or financial analysts or accounting professionals. But we want to distill this in probably the easiest way to understand it. Some of the things that we're going to be talking about today can be very heady. So,
yes.
Right, don't you agree?
Yes.
We want to distill.
We're going to be careful.
We have to be careful so you make sure that you get, if you get one thing out of listening to us today, we'll be grateful for it. And you'll be grateful for it.
Absolutely. And if there's anything that we talk about today that you maybe you're confused about or maybe you're not really sure about.
Reach out to us.
Yeah, you're not sure if it, maybe it does it apply to me. Please call. Because what we're doing is we're trying to provide some general information. We're trying to perk up everybody's ears. Let's think about these things. But this is certainly not qualified advising. And I want to make that clear. And I think you as well. We're giving advice in general terms. And we're kind of talking about things in general terms. But this is certainly anything that you think might apply to you. Just give us a call. Go to our website. You can contact both of us through the website. It's easy. It will get emails.
So let's, where should, if somebody has a question you know, after the show, what number should they call in your office?
Our office is 209 area code, 427-2200.
And if you have any question about, you know, their parts of it, because Claudine and I, we complement each other. There are things that I come, you know, and, you know, you can call my office, 559-207-3148. And more on that, you know, in our website, you know, SHERRON-law.com. Very easy. SHERRON-law.com. And ours is Greenland, as in the country of Greenland. GREENLANDHQ for headquarters.com. All right. So let's, you want to talk about some of the specific, because I see a lot of content here, SB 1300. And do you want to just give a teaser?
Yeah, let's go just over some of the basic ones that probably apply to a lot of people out here. And these are some of the new employment regulations that have come forward this year, 2019. One of them is SB 1343, and it's expanded harassment training requirements. And it used to be that companies with 50 or more employees only were the ones that had to worry about it, and they had to provide sexual harassment training to all supervisors and to for every 2 years. And now that's changed. And we're looking at now employers who have 5 or more employees must provide at least 1 hour of training to all non-supervisory employees.
You know, that's huge.
That's huge. That's virtually every small business.
I mean, I don't know if you guys caught that. For a long time, it was 50 plus, right?
Yep. A lot of labor codes were only affected 50 or more employees.
When did this, I mean, this hasn't happened. Is this already law?
It's
proposed?
No, it is law, but it doesn't become effective until January 1, 2020. So we've got a year to get ready to implement this. But as of January 1, 2020, every two years thereafter.
Okay, I need to write this down because that affects me.
Well, by January 1, 2020.
So from that day forward, if you have 5 employees or more, you're subject to this law.
Let me clarify. You must provide at least 1 hour of training to all non-supervisory employees by January 1, 2020. So you have from January 1, 2019, this year.
Oh, we got to start doing it now.
This year.
Well, that thanks for clarifying.
And then every 2 years thereafter.
So, of course, this is going to be, you know, added cost for a business owner,
yes.
Right? There's nothing you can do about it. But what is the cost of not doing it?
Well, the cost, any time that you violate a labor code, and each labor code, well, not each one per se, but labor codes come with different penalties. And then there's...
Okay. Hey, guess what? We're having so much fun. It's time for a break. So you're listening to Business and Legal Talk with Leo and Claudine. Stay tuned. We'll be back in 60. Back, You are listening to Business and Legal Talk with Leo and Claudine. I am your host, Leo Landaverde, and my co-host is Claudine. Claudine, you're back on.
I'm back on. So we were discussing some of the new regulations that have come about in the employment realm. We have another one that is relative to salary history. When employers are interviewing employees, back in 2017, we had some regulations that came about that said that we had to be very careful when we were talking about salary history. We've also got some...
Which one is that one?
AB 2282. And so we've had some clarification on that. And the legislation prohibited employers from asking job applicants for salary history information and required employers to give applicants the pay scale for a position upon reasonable request.
Yeah.
And that's good. I mean, I don't know how many times I've interviewed for a position over, you know, quite a lot of years. But you're always, if it's not published, you're always kind of wondering. Like, and then you're not sure. And then they say, well, send me your salary requirements. And then you're afraid to put it down because, or you want to put a range because you're afraid that if I put a salary of, you know, $50,000 on my application and they're in their minds, they're only going to pay $40,000. Do they just take my resume and throw it away?
Well, I need to interject because I'm actually asking questions on behalf of business owners. I am a business owner myself. So if I'm interviewing somebody across from me in the past, I was able to say, hey, so what are you looking to make, right?
Well, you can ask them you can ask them what they want to make. You just can't demand that they provide their history.
Okay.
There's a difference.
So in the past, what I would do, and this is in the past, I would say, okay, so this job that you know, this company, ABC, and you were there for 3 years, what was your, how much do you end up making? How much were you making when you were there?
Right. And
they would say, X amount of dollars.
Or it would be put on a resume or it would be put on an application. When you fill out the application, there's a box that says,
starting hourly rate, ending or salary.
And a lot of employers use that as a way to gauge somebody's growth over a spectrum of time.
Correct.
So if you were in, say, the CPA world and you started off, at, $50,000 a year and you were at a job, but by the time you left that job 3 years later, you had, increased to $65,000 a year, that would be an indication that you were being rewarded for growth.
And you must be doing something right.
Correct.
Presumption, right.
And now we're just not able to demand that.
What's the deal? Something happened? I mean, how does that happen?
Honestly, when it comes to employment law in California, there's oftentimes rarely rhyme or reason. There's... We have so many laws and we have so many little things that other states don't do and that are so different from federal. California is a very, very pro-employee state.
Right.
And I'm really conflicted about it because I represent business owners.
Right.
We work hard to keep them compliant. We work hard to help them stay educated. We also see employers doing it so wrong that it makes me just, it's frustrating to me because I have these clients who are working so hard trying to do it right. And yet there are employers out there who are just doing it so wrong and intentionally and, intentionally not providing wage statements and intentionally not paying overtime. We come across them and it's some big companies.
Okay.
And it's frustrating.
But you're going to have those outlier employers who are out there to steal from employees.
Mm-hmm.
But because of the small minority, all of us pay.
Right. But if we didn't have these rules, I think it would be worse. And so when I see these really egregious behaviors on the part of employers, and I think to myself, well, that's exactly why we have all the regulations, because you couldn't regulate yourself. And you couldn't.
Good point.
Your employees are always going to be the backbone and the lifeblood of your business. And making peace with that and not trying to take advantage of them is so, how you're going to be successful.
So if you just tune into the show right now and you're driving, well, you're listening to Business and Legal Talk with Leah and Claudine. And Claudine is an amazing attorney with multiple areas of expertise. One of them is it's labor law, which is what we're talking about today. And what I help customers or our business owners is really how do you navigate the treacherous waters of growth in a company and do it so profitably. So if you're just tuning into the show, we come from both angles, like yin and yang. She comes in Claudine is an expert at making sure that you're sustainable, that you are going to be able to be around and you're not getting sued. We haven't even talked about money yet on this.
Oh, no.
And I'm making sure that you're profitable. But if you made $1 million worth of profit in 1 year, but then you have to pay it off with a wrongful termination lawsuit, and then you wipe out and it's going to cost you $1 million, you made zero. Well, that's not what we're about. We want to help you. So if you just tune in, that's what we're talking right. about. Latest, what do you call this?
These are some new regulations. Yeah, regulations that came about this year. We had another one, AB 1976, that requires employers to make reasonable efforts to provide a room other than a bathroom for breastfeeding parents.
Yeah, I saw that.
So, and that's kind of interesting because that was kind of the quote unquote private place that employers could use to set up a comfortable spot. And now they're wanting us to make reasonable efforts. And whenever we start talking about what is reasonable, that's just such a gray area. I mean, literally attorneys can and do go on for days over debating over what's reasonable.
On the thousand shades of gray?
Mm-hmm. That's exactly it. That's exactly it. So, I always tell my clients, and make an effort. So if you have an extra room and it's not being used, go ahead and use it. If you don't have it, if you would have to build something onto your building or, something like, that'd probably be a little bit unreasonable. It's not too hard to figure out. Just take an effort.
I mean, some of it is, you would think, is sort of common sense, right?
Yeah. And I can see why, being a mom, I wasn't in the employment force at the time that I was raising my infants, but I can see how a mom maybe doesn't want to sit necessarily in a bathroom with, people walking in and out, toilets flushing and, it's a bathroom. Come on.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
I mean, it's not a horrible idea. It's not a horrible regulation, but, be aware of that. And these are little things that people don't necessarily know unless somebody's there to tell them. Or until you get sued. And that's usually when people find out.
You don't want to know then.
Yep.
Okay, so what else is coming down the pipeline?
I think that's pretty much it. Probably the biggest thing that happened last year was not a regulation, but more it was a Supreme Court decision. And the Supreme Court in the state of California, not the federal Supreme Court, but our state Supreme Court, came up with a ruling that has pretty much rocked employment law from industry to industry. And that was called what we refer to as the Dynamex decision. And
right.
It's Dynamex Operations West versus the Superior Court of Los Angeles. And what the Dynamex decision did was it changed how we look at independent contractors. And independent contractors have been the lifeblood in many, many, many ways of our economy. If you think about real estate offices, all the real estate agents are independent contractors.
Realtors and
hairdressers. They oftentimes rent their station. And a lot of people like to be independent contractors. We have used independent contractors as paralegals. There's times where we have a heavier workflow and we will hire independent contractors. There is so many different industries. And yes, people have tried to use the independent contractor status to get around paying, payroll tax and so forth. And they think it's cheaper. But there is a real big section of our society that does very well and enjoys being independent contractors, likes to not have the regulation of showing up at 8 o'clock in the morning or taking a break at 10 and, lunch at 12 and so forth. And they are able to set their own schedule. And this decision has completely set it all on its head.
So interesting thing that you mentioned that unrelated, we didn't know this week, but we were going to be talking about this. Like I didn't know 2 weeks ago, but I was reading something in the news about this is having a ripple effect across the country. And there was this lady who was a hairdresser who there were seven of them. And then she was making X amount of dollars and she had freedom. She would come and go, show up to do her hair appointments. And she would go, she was a 1099, was treated as a 1099 independent contractor. Something happened. And then later she said that her employer turned all of seven of them into W-2 employees.
Yep.
But what happened was that she was getting paid X amount per hour as an independent contractor, right? And then she would make X amount of dollars because she would have a plan because she would come as she would, whether it's $300-$400 a week. Well, that got cut in half the minute she was. So later she was working the same amount of hours once he was a W-2 employee, right, but making half as much. And right, the employer had to regulate more, and they had to pay the employers. So it's tough to figure out who's a winner there.
Right. It really is. And honestly, I think there's some responsibility on the contractor or employee. If the contractor wants to be an employee, then they need to take the effort to go find the job that makes them an employee, as opposed to being an independent contractor. As an employee, you do have a choice. You have a choice. You know, there are benefits, and I know from working with independent contractors in my own industry, those benefits oftentimes surround schedule and demands. And independent contractors can come in at 9 if they want to come in at 9, or they can come in at not at all.
Because they're free from control.
That's right, because they're free from control.
We haven't even gotten to that part.
Right. And so in my case, we would often, you know, we work by assignment, and we would say, well, you know, we have, you know, X, Y, and Z that needs to be done, or is it something you're...
Some project, work.
Right. And right, we have companies that, there are companies that provide paralegal services. There are companies that, one legal is probably the most common. They provide legal services. They will file documents for you. They will pick up documents. If we need documents coming from the courthouse, we can call one legal and, you know, make an order, and they'll run and get it for you and send it. So this is going to really rock it, because what the court has done now is taking it down from what the balancing test that we used to have, which, you know, had, you know, a number of different factors. And we would do this balancing test on, you know, is there control by the employer? Does the employer provide the equipment? Does the employer provide the education?
You're talking about a year or so, 2 years ago, right?
Well, this is what it's traditionally been. The Barella test came about in 1989. So it's, and it's similar to the factors that the IRS uses.
Right.
This balancing test. And now we have the ABC test, which is literally
When did it become effective? Do you know?
The court ruled on April 30th of 2018.
So it became law then?
Well, it became a case precedent. So through case precedent, it became how we now do things.
So the IRS took that and said...
Nope, this is just state.
This is
just the state of California. And this is modeled after another state, but this is not what the feds do. This on a federal level, this is not at all what the feds
Interesting.
Do.
Interesting.
But now what we do is the first prong of the ABC test is that the worker is free from the control and direction of the hiring entity in connection with the performance of work. Not too different than what we had. It's the second prong that actually is the killer, and I think
this is the B portion.
This is it. This is B, and I think this is what actually kills everybody, is that the worker performs work that is outside the usual course of the hiring entity's business, and that means I can't hire a contract paralegal because they're not performing something completely different than the type of business that I perform. So I can hire a plumber. And he would not, or she would
Correct.
Not be an
but
employee.
For me, you can hire an independent contractor accountant because that's what I do, right? It's
that's
the
right.
main thing of business. So,
And the third prong is that the worker is customarily engaged in an independently established trade, occupation, or business of the same nature. And that's not too different. When we worked with independent contractors prior, or we were advising clients, we would always want the independent contractor to have their own business license, establish their own insurance, and
run it like a business.
Yeah, and ensure that they invoiced us or they mm-hmm. invoice the client, that the client wasn't paying them like payroll happens, that we were actually receiving an invoice. But this ABC test has really, really, really thrown businesses. And I'll tell you right now, probably 80% of the businesses in California don't even know this exists yet.
I know.
Until they get the
crazy,
lawsuit.
Right? It's crazy, right? It's a hot area of litigation. So, you know, the way I had to understand it, because it took me a while, even for me, and I do this for a living, to like wrap my head around it, was like the whole thing about the restaurant and the cook, right?
Right.
So if you're a restaurant and you produce food, right, what would be par for doing business would be you need somebody to cook the meat that, you know, the food that you eat. So could that person be an independent contractor? And I'm like, aha, no, they can't, because you need them to run the business. So right now you're listening to Business and Legal Talk with Leo and Claudine, and we're talking about the topics that matter to business owners, and you should be paying attention to this because your largest expense as an employer, it's going to be your payroll, right? Payroll. And your staff and your wages and all this stuff that you're listening to right now affects you. So we'll be right back. We're going to continue our conversation on labor regulation. All right, welcome back. You are listening to Business and Legal Talk with Leo and Claudine here in KFIV 1360 iHeartRadio Media Power Talk. We're having a blast. I mean, I had to be reminded twice by our producer that we had to wrap it up in the last segment. So
we're just having so much fun.
We're having so much fun. And you would think that two people talking about changing regulation would be so much fun, but I guess we can make it fun.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So let's keep going. All right. So we were, okay. So just to bring you guys back, if you just tune into the show, we're talking about that the changes that affect you, your biggest expense or investment, whichever way you want to look at it, is your staff, right?
Right.
And we're talking about the ABC test.
Right. The new ABC test.
The new ABC test that affects you. It definitely, if you're here in the Central Valley, you are in California, and it affects you.
Yes.
So pay attention.
And it really is affecting any type of industry. So just to kind of recap, virtually anybody who's using, okay, so absolutely anybody who's using an independent contractor should stop immediately and reconsider this new ABC test on how we determine whether they are properly classified as an independent contractor or whether they are properly should be classified as a W-2 employee. Because this decision right now, it's just created so much havoc. We have a couple of big lawsuits that are going on at the appellate level right now, one particularly with a trucking company. Trucking industries are being hit very, very hard. Because oftentimes the trucking industry, the dispatcher, hires a truck and the truck's owned by the driver and they go on about their business.
And huge, right.
They're saying now there is a lawsuit going on right now that would classify all of those independent contractors that own their own trucks as employees.
Well, this whole thing about Uber and Lyft. I mean, yep. It's rocked our world.
Yep.
Right?
Absolutely. The real estate industry, I've talked to a few people with the Central Valley Association of Realtors who had a case a number of years ago that relied on a particular business and professions code that in the business and professions code, and I don't know the citation offhand, but I've read it a couple of times, and it basically said that in the real estate industry, the brokers can make a decision whether or not, let me state that a little bit different. Realtors could be either independent contractors or employees. And that, it even when I read it, I'm really anxious to see how this is going to come about because they can be either independent contractor or employee doesn't mean that, like, anybody could be either. It, like a hairdresser could be an independent contractor or an employee.
In a different scenario for a different company.
Exactly.
Right? So you could technically be both, but not in the same company.
That's right. Or, paralegals. They could be independent contractor or W-2 employee, providing that they fit within the parameters of the Borrello test. And I think that we are going to see some real pushback. I mean, the trucking industry right now is providing a lot of pushback. But the real estate industry, if it comes about that the real estate industry becomes affected by this, I think right now they're kind of holding tight on some previous decisions that were particular to their industry. But should that get challenged, and what does it take to challenge it? It takes one employee to find an attorney willing to file the suit for
them. That's what happened in Dynamics.
That's exactly it.
One person employee. Started it all.
One person. And that's all it takes.
Crazy.
And how much? And these things become challenged. And so, well, I think a lot of people maybe have a little bit of sense of false security because of their industry has been traditionally looked at as clear independent contractor. I had a client who had a dance studio. and had dance teachers that would come in for an hour here, hour there, based on their particular discipline. And they taught, the teachers taught at a whole bunch of different places. And they determined their hours and they said, well, I want to teach a class at, you know, Thursday at 5 o'clock or, you know, whatever it was. Right. And they really did classically fit the definition. They carried their own insurance. They invoiced. They had their own business. They set their own hours. They had their own education. The dance.
Spells independent contractor, yeah. Tamir. Except, you wanna, except, what's the punchline?
The punchline is now they are performing a service that falls within the purview of what the company does because the company provides a dance studio.
Wow. So now it's...
it's all set on its ear.
It's the... well, that would be the B.
Yeah.
All right?
That's it.
That's the killer.
B,
and the ABC.
Of the ABC, B is pretty much the killer.
It's and like it's, the dividing line.
And it virtually encompasses every scenario. And so right now, the, you know, the good news, the bad news, is we have competing legislation right now. Proposed legislation is going to what we call codify this Dynamex decision and make it an actual, you know, labor code. And one is seeking to codify the Borrello test.
If you were to look at your crystal ball, what do you think? Next, for the next, what it seems like things are very fluid right now in the state.
Things are, with employment, things are often very fluid.
Really?
Yeah, really. It really changes.
Not just
a lot.
Now.
It really changes a lot. I mean,
all
it was,
the time.
It was just a couple of years ago, we got hit with the mandatory 3 days paid sick leave.
Right.
And
this
is
July 1st, 15, right? Or I think it was 15.
15, 16.
Yeah, I
would remember. It seems like forever in my
it
world.
It was significant. Yeah, I know, but a month ago it seems forever for
yeah.
me. There's so much I have to worry about today
right.
for our clients. But yeah, it was. I remember it being very significant because for the first time you had to actually manually track this sick pay.
That's true. That's right. And a lot. While a lot of the employers are aware now, of course, they're aware that they have to do this.
It only took us 3 years.
As you know, per usual.
Right.
But it, you know, and now we're accustomed to it, and it seems like it's been there forever. The tracking of it is important. People still come to us with questions on how do they modify their PTO time and what happens there with PTO and how does that is that affected by
well the unbundling,
right?
And, because some companies put PTO, they put sick pay and vacation together, and
mm-hmm.
they call it PTO.
Mm-hmm.
I had a question about that last week.
So what happens when a person, say, has a week of PTO time and they take their week of PTO time and they go on vacation to Hawaii and they use up their entire bank of PTO time and then they come back
and they have
and they get sick.
And they have. So what do we do then?
We give them sick time.
So it overrules everything, right?
I always tell the employer to, if you're going to err, let's err on the side of caution. Give them the sick time. Don't ever deny them paid sick time. It's a regulation. You must provide it. And that's just the way it is.
Okay, so
that you provide other things is not relevant to whether or not you provided your sick pay.
Let me throw this. Okay. So I'm thinking, so if you have some, so 24 hours, right? Or 24 hours is the regulation over a year's time.
Correct.
So it's 3 days. So you can use it 2 hours, 4 hours. But what happens? Okay. So if you're legally mandated and somebody uses those 24 hours and you're tracking it, what happens if they call in sick beyond 24 hours that you've been tracking? So they're sick for an entire day and that wouldn't make 32 hours.
Well, excuse me, you're not then required, if I understand the question correctly, you're not required to pay them for that sick time. You're required to pay for 24 hours.
Right. Just when you had this thought that was
I know. Anytime we talk about paid sick time or any of this, it does make me want to cough. So I apologize.
Maybe we should
for that.
Stop talking about that.
It's a tough thing. Well, the other thing that I did want to introduce, and I try to talk about this with all of my new clients who are coming in, because I feel like as an attorney that represents business owners, everybody needs to understand that labor codes can oftentimes receive multiple penalties for one violation.
Oh, the stacking.
The stacking.
Which is what we were talking about.
Yeah.
I need you to, can you write, we need to talk about that.
Yes.
Okay, because we're coming back, we're getting ready. There's actually, I want to give you, if you're listening to the show right now, this is Business and Legal Talk with Leo and Claudine, and we're about to go into a break soon. But what about the people that hire Upwork and use this website to hire people that do work for them remotely? U.S. and you can actually have a independent contractor in Canada and all that mess. You know, I'd like to talk a little bit about because I'm sure that I'm not the only one thinking about that. And in an effort to save on payroll, so people are starting to come up with creative ways,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot there that needs to be addressed, and I think. So we're going to be talking about that. We're going to be talking about, I don't know if this is the time, I think the whole thing about insuring against that, and I think you should be, we don't have the insurance person, but if I had an insurance person right now, they would be waving their hands in the air, like, oh
yes.
My gosh, you have to have employment practices type of liability insurance, right? I get it, you get it, but does the average business owner know that there's insurance that protects you if you're doing your job?
And let me tell you, Murphy's Law, I and we can talk about this after the break, but I had a client who sat down with their insurance broker who said, you really, really need EPLI insurance. And the broker decided, or the employer decided to bypass it. And 2 weeks later.
Wow. So before, those are topics. So can we wrap this whole thing up? So we had a couple more minutes, but have we put that to rest, the whole ABC test, do you feel, that we talked
about? Yeah, absolutely. I mean, really the truth is if you use independent contractors in any way right now, please stop and look at it. Come talk to us. Give us a call. 209-427-2200. Hit us up on the website at sharon-law.com, sharon-law.com. It is really, really, really the penalties, the costs. The Supreme Court did say that this could be retroactive.
Claudine, you becoming a professional marketer. That just flew very nicely.
Oh, wasn't that nice?
My gosh, I'm impressed. What, tell me again what that website is.
sharon-law.com.
Just to see how kind of rolls.
Well, I think I did pick the domain name, so it kind of was one of those things that felt good at the time.
It's amazing how much we evolved over the last 6 weeks, and we never really had a talk show before, and now we're getting somewhere where we're actually having fun.
No, but we do talk to clients day in and day out.
Right, that's what I do. So, you are listening again to Business and Legal Talk with Leo and Claudine. See, stay tuned. We'll be right back. Welcome back. You're listening to Business and Legal Talk here with Leo and Claudine. Here, welcome back. Where do we leave it?
EPLI insurance.
Oh.
Which I find that to be really interesting that you bring up EPLI insurance.
Why?
Because you're an accountant and a CFO and you're doing financial things. And
why am I worried about insurance?
Well, no, yeah, I suppose from an accounting perspective, that's like the worst case scenario.
Right.
Insurance is there to cover that worst case scenario. But a lot of people don't know about EPLI insurance.
So, people ask me, Leo, so what does a CFO do, right? As we talked about in earlier shows, companies that are north of $10 million, and if they actually have capital involved, they have mm-hmm. to have a CFO. If you have zero revenue, if you raise capital for investors, any self-respected investor is going to want a CFO on the company immediately.
Right.
Why? Because CFOs, we worry about two things, cash and risk.
Yeah.
Right?
Right.
Risk.
Right.
And you're going to hear me talk about this every day, all day to my mitigation, risk mitigation.
Right.
So how do you mitigate risk on the potential of something so profoundly and so expensive that can rock a company? You can actually have a company go out of business, not being able to protect themselves against things that they should have known about
all the time.
By labor law.
Yeah, right? All the time. I've literally had a client receive a letter from an attorney, come to me and say, what should I do? And I said, you need to tell me what is your dollar figure, you know, 10 bucks above bankruptcy and 10 bucks below bankruptcy. And we're going to hit it right in the middle. Wow. And we're going to settle this thing. We're out of here. Absolutely. And the legal fees were actually very, very low, like less than $1,000 by the time we were all done. But he
really,
the employer wrote a check for the settlement. It was just one of those things that it was, there's no question it could have gone like wildfire, because you need to have your employee files set up for a certain way. An attorney can't defend you unless the ammunition's provided.
Correct. So let's get a little bit into that. So employer practices liability insurance. So what it does, it acts as like a blanket covering your business. It's kind of like umbrella specifically for those employment practices. So the way you hire, your onboarding, employee handbooks, the way you do progressive discipline, the way you conduct business, and, you know, the wage and hour, the meal and breaks, all of those things, you know, the business hours and all the protocols that you as a business owner need to be aware of. So you can, if you have employees, you're mandated to obey those, right?
That's right.
Some at state, some are federal, but if you're in the state of California, you are subject to a state. And so you will make mistakes, right? And people make mistakes. And I know I can see you. Okay, hold on. I know you're already. So employers make mistakes, right? And they do that. And there is this insurance that I learned about probably 10 years ago. And I had a company, had about 50 employees. And I ran into an insurance broker, and he started telling me, I'm like, you, and he was surprised that I didn't have it. I'm like, what am I supposed to know something? He goes, yeah, like for a small amount of money, isn't that what insurance is about? You pay a little bit so you can protect against a whole lot, mm-hmm. right? And so ever since I learned that, I have never not had it. So you do things right, and guess what? An employee is going to come after you for whatever reason. But what happens if you did things right? You have insurance defense. You have insurance that is going to protect you, because the insurance company is going to make sure that you have all these things that you say you're going to have in place, right? So they help you making sure that you, when you get sued, and you will if you're in business any length of time. So we have the money to be able to bring somebody competent like you, right. Claudine, right? And you have the ammunition.
Right.
Because what are you going to ask for? You want to talk about some of the things that, you know, like you want, don't you want to see the employee handbook? Don't you want to see a progressive discipline?
I do. No. Actually, that's a whole nother subject, employee handbooks, but and discipline. But we do want to see that the employee files are in order, that they have certain things in them.
The W-9 is not in the file?
That's
not right. The W-9. The I-9. Sorry. Thinking about 1099s right now.
But so we do want to see employers managing their employees, managing them conscientiously, keeping track of those files, making sure that any discipline that has, you know, taken place has been notated in the file. So we have the stuff down. So we really work with employers a lot to kind of coach them on how to do the employee thing. That's the ammunition. The other thing is, you know, I had a client, speaking of EPLI insurance, I had a client a couple of years ago who had met with their broker, as I had said, and the broker said, hey, you know, you're kind of getting up there. You have 49, 48 employees. It's important that you look at EPLI insurance. And, you know, they decided to pass at that time. And I think, gosh, I want to say it was like a month later, maybe 2 months later, in any event, disgruntled employee gets terminated, finds an attorney in LA, decides to come back and sue. He's suing for some overtime payments that he claimed that he was entitled to because of drive time, which if you have people out there with drive time, that's complicated in and of itself. And so he files a lawsuit, but he files a class action lawsuit. And then he files what's called a PAGA suit, or Private Attorney General Act. And we can get into that another time. But that's essentially, it functions like a class action.
Wow.
And we managed to argue and dispose of the overtime claims and all of that. And the first thing an attorney does when they are going to sue you is they send you a letter and they request a copy of the employee file.
Right.
And they want a copy of that employee. And that includes all the employee time cards and a copy of all the wage statements or pay stubs.
Mm.
The first thing we do is we look at the wage statements and we look to see if there's any violation on the statement, because Section 226 of our labor code outlines specific information that must be on. And I'll tell you what, this client, we managed to skirt all of the overtime and all of the really complicated stuff. It came down to, was there a pay period starting date and ending date on the paycheck stub? They only had the ending date of the pay period.
No way.
And that particular issue has been litigated by FedEx all the way to the higher courts. And the courts have come back and said, you must have your beginning date and ending date. The violation basically amounted to $4,000 per employee.
How many are we talking about?
We're talking about 49.
Oh.
Almost $200,000.
This my CFO ear. I mean, I'm thinking about money draining out of the bank account and because you have to pay for that.
And that had nothing to do. And that was only one way. And we weren't even stacking. That's just the one. That's just the one violation.
We need to talk about stacking, by the way.
With stacking is something that happens. And so you can be in violation. Let's say, for example, you did not correctly pay your overtime. We see this a lot with people who have employees that are driving. They don't pay the overtime correctly. And so you get you get hit for the overtime, then you get hit for Labor Code 558, which says if you have not if you have not correctly paid on a labor code, or if you're a violation of a labor code that regulates hours worked, then you get another penalty for $50 for the first pay period, and $100 for every pay period thereafter. And so then now you have that penalty. And then what happens is you now have a penalty for an inaccurate wage statement because the overtime wasn't reflected correctly on the wage statement. So now we have another penalty, and the wage statement penalty is a $50 for the first pay period, $100 for every pay period thereafter, for a cap of $4,000. So the just one thing, I, you know, didn't understand the overtime, and I was, you know, people were driving. Wow. Driving, and they were, you know, working 10 hours a day, and they were getting straight time for the drive time. It stacks up, and that, again, that's not even going into our PAGA claims, which are an addition, in addition to everything else. It racks up so quickly that I can't even imagine. We work with clients often to say budget for legal. You know,
it should be a line item in your profit and loss.
Yeah. And budget for it. At the beginning of the year, think to yourself, okay, we're going to set aside X amount of dollars for legal. And it's just there. I cannot tell you how many people come to us who have not budgeted at anything for legal,
Is ever going to happen.
Yep. Let alone disaster.
Oh, wow.
Let alone That's disaster.
So, an
EPLI protects you from all that.
So back to EPLI. So the way it's okay. So things are going to cost you money. You either going to pay 100% yourself, or you're going to use another means to pay, right? So the whole thing of the whole principle about insurance is this, is you know, if you have $1 million, I think you can get away with not having car insurance, personal, mm-hmm. if you put a bond with the state, right?
Right.
So you are legally, and why would you in the first place? But you there's a legal way out of not paying Geico or whoever else, you know, you have for insurance. But the cost is the state wants to know that you have the ability to pay if and when something will happen.
Right.
It's just a matter of time, right?
Yeah. And we really, you know, it's so important to understand that defending yourself never pays. There's no settlement you're going to get. There's no,
right.
There's nothing. It's not like when you're pursuing a claim, you're looking for a settlement or you're looking for, you know, quote unquote, windfall of money. When you're the employer and you're defending yourself, it's just money going out the door. It's not coming back again, even if you win. And a lot of, you know, less scrupulous attorneys in this industry know that. And we call those nuisance claim. They will send you a nasty letter and they say, well, look, we're going to, you know, file this, that, and the other. But if you want to settle for, you know, $5,000 or $7,000, we'll go
ahead.
That's
quick money, right?
Well, and it doesn't take a whole lot of work on a calculator to figure out how quickly does it take to get to $5,000 or $7,000 in legal fees.
So if you're listening to this show, and we've been talking for the last really hour, and we're pretty soon wrapping it up, it's about how all of this knowledge, right? That as a business owner, how are you going to keep in your head if you're trying, if you produce, if you have a product, you're worried about making sure your product is right and you're selling it to the market. If you provide a service, right, you're perfecting your service and you should be an expert at what you do.
Right.
But everything else, there is the legal side, there is the accounting side of things. And that's what we're trying to help you realize. Just if you're listening to this show, if you get one thing today from listening and you put it into action, what would that be, Claudine? What would it be like?
First of all, if you're using independent contractors, stop immediately.
So that would be the takeaway?
Yeah, stop immediately. Secondly, I think just don't turn your head to the scary monster of employee issues. I think every employer knows that employee issues can create absolute disaster, and they can. Please don't turn your head to it.
So, well, what a great show. In fact,
be proactive.
Yeah, be proactive.
Be proactive.
1099s. Think about it. If you have an independent contractor, stop and think if this is really an independent contractor.
Well, it's probably not now, but definitely sit down with somebody who can help you strategize your policies.
Where do we go for legal? If they want to reach, get a hold of you right now, where would?
Certainly call the office at area code 209-427-2200.
And your website?
Or website, sharon-law.com. And that's S-H-E-R-R-O-N.
That's right.
-law.com.
If you want to learn how to grow your business profitably and effective, come all about the profit, go to greenlandhq.com, G-R-E-E-N-L-A-N-D-H-Q.com, or call our office, 559-207-3148. We would love to just hear from you. You don't have to engage us, but we want to make sure you're empowered. So you have been listening to Business and Legal Talk with Leo and Claudine, and I hope you have a fantastic Saturday. We'll see you next week.
See you next week.